Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And welcome into AOA, Agriculture of America. Thanks for joining us here on the program today. Great to have you along for the conversation about farming, ranching, and rural America. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Got an exciting show lined up for you here today. Coming up, we're going to have a sit-down conversation with the new president and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation. Well, he's been on the job a few months, but he's still relatively new at the position. Greg Dowd with the NMPF is going to join us after the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk the avian flu situation in dairy, the FMMO modernization process, and more. That's coming up in segment three today. Before that, segment two, we're going to get a look at the latest meat demand monitor out from Kansas State University. Dr. Glenn Tonsor is going to join us for that conversation as well. And before we get to the end of the show as well, we're going to take a look at what's happening in the dairy markets. Alyssa Badger with High Ground Dairy is going to join us here on today's AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Hard work, long hours, and extreme conditions aren't new. Cenex Premium Diesel meets the demands of today's toughest engines. Premium Diesel to keep you going. Learn more at Cenex.com. Right now, though, we want to start the show and have a conversation with our friends at the National Sorghum Producers. Joining us now, Executive Director for the National Sorghum Producers, Greg Ruley, is with us here on AOA. Greg, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today. Hope you're doing well.
Jesse, I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for the invitation, and I hope that your day starting off tremendously.
Mine is. The coffee cup is full, and we are ready for a whole slate of conversations here today on the show. And just want to start as we're getting into the heart of spring planting season. I know a lot of folks in the Southern Plains have already been putting crops in the ground and more, and we continue to watch as we work into a new year. Any thoughts on the sorghum crop outlook here for 2024, Greg? Let's just start there real quick.
Absolutely. Jesse, you're spot on. Crop is in the ground and has been now for probably 30 to 45 days in kind of in the Texas Gulf Coast area. As you move further north, you know, sorghum planting dates are pushed back a little bit just to wait until we've got that warmer weather that will promote germination of that seed once it's in the ground. You know, I think the most interesting outlook in terms of sorghum acres, the prospective planting report came out last week. We were all waiting, you know, as we do every spring, right? They get us every spring, anxiously awaiting the report coming out. And, you know, we saw a number over 6 million bushels for sorghum. And what we hear from seed sales and other indicators would suggest, you know, a steady to increasing number of acres. So that number may be a little bit low. But I think the most important thing out of that report was the fact that there were like 10 million acres that went missing in USDA's count on acres. And so, you know, I think every commodity's out there right now trying to figure out which piece of that is moving their way. And sorghum's no different than the other commodities in that respect.
Definitely. I couldn't agree more. I know we'll get a new WASDE report out later this week as well that the trade will be watching that too. Greg, let's turn our attention to some policy issues. Of course, the Farm Bill. We still don't have a new one. I know that a Politico report out, Senator Grassley of Iowa has said he doesn't expect the Senate to pick up the Farm Bill here before the summer, although he'd like to see it. And Chuck Schumer has not said the Farm Bill is a top priority. It sounds like here, according to that Politico article, it seems to me that this Farm Bill, more than likely, we're going to be looking at 2025 after the election. Is that kind of what you're hearing, Greg?
Well, I think that, you know, in terms of moving a bill across both the floors of both chambers and sending it to the president's office, the calendar does not work in our favor in terms of moving legislation in 2024. That doesn't mean, though, that I don't think we will see some activity at the committee level. We think that there are certainly a lot of work that's been done by the House and Senate Ag Committee staff. We've met with them several times so far this year and continue to keep those doors of communication open. So I think the most important thing, though, is to convey to them and to the elected officials how important it is for us, given the economic circumstances that we face in agriculture this year, lowering commodity prices and input prices that have remained relatively high, the fact that we're squeezing the margin out of commodity and you know, the pockets of farmers this year, and we've got to make some updates. And so, you know, one of those is an increase to reference prices. It's a call that has been made by all the commodity organizations to make sure that those reference prices reflect the cost of production and commodity prices that are relevant or that are in place today. We haven't updated reference prices in a decade, and I can promise you, and you know it, and your listeners know that the farm economy in 2024 is not the same farm economy that we had in 2014 when those reference prices were last adjusted.
It definitely is not. I will agree with you 1,000%. A couple other things real quick. I know that the sorghum producers joined with many of your partner ag groups here just a few weeks back to call on the EPA to issue an E15 emergency waiver. We're hopefully going to see that here this month. Your thoughts on that situation, Greg?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really a relevant policy call to make, and it was why it was sort of easy to sign on to that letter. As we see the unrest in the Midwest, we're seeing gas oil prices go up. Gas prices are following that. And so the concern is when we get into that heaviest travel season of the year, we could well see the highest gas prices of the year at the same time. And so increasing and allowing that E15 mandate to be in place will help us displace some of that higher petroleum cost with a more moderate ethanol addition to that gallon of gas, and use that to help mitigate those price impacts, that price shocks that we're seeing as a result of unrest in the Middle East.
Greg, I know as well, real quick, want to give a plug for a couple events for you guys. The Sorghum Yield Contest is now open, and then I don't know, you guys have other great events coming up, like a PAC golf tournament at the end of April, things like that. Can you give us a quick plug for some of those contests and events, Greg?
Certainly, absolutely. Let me. The nearest one is the PAC golf tournament. It's April 27th. That's a Saturday. I know here it's in Dodge City, which is where I live. It's going to be too cold yet to get sorghum in the ground, so come out and swing the golf club and help us raise money for a great cause. Those PAC dollars in an election year are absolutely vital. And so for us, it's one of our premier fundraising events for our political action committee. As you said, Jesse, the sorghum yield contest is open. Seems a little early, right? Seed's still in a bag. Still trying to decide which hybrid I'm going to plant in which field. But that process can begin early. And then, honestly, we encourage producers to do that. Get those fields identified early. Begin to add the information in terms of planting date and hybrid and population and whatnot early on, so that when you get to the end of the year and we get into that harvest rush, you're not going back and trying to find those notes and making sure that you've got that data entered correctly. Start the process early. Great contest. Looking forward to increasing the participation in that as we increase acres in 2024.
Learn more at sorghumgrowers.com. We've been talking with the executive director of the National Sorghum Producers, Greg Ruley. Greg, thanks for joining us on the show. We'll get you back on again soon.
Thank you, Jesse. Have a great day.
All right. Coming up next here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. We're going to talk with Dr. Glenn Tonsor from K-State about the meat demand monitor for this month. That's next on AOA. On the April episode of The Monthly Grind, we discussed the latest on SAF and corn as a feedstock for SAF with Lane Howard from the Missouri Corn Growers Association and John Delmonte from the Michigan Corn Growers Association.
We've seen the growth of the aviation industry, specifically the commercial industry. By 2030, we're looking for 8 billion passengers. SAF helps offset those carbon emissions, sometimes up to 80%, and so that's going to be critical for all of those commercial airliners to reach their sustainability goals.
Corn is a very sustainable ethanol to jet pathway for SAF. Obviously, as the markets are kind of reflecting here recently, there's an abundance of corn. So we know that we have an abundant feedstock for an ethanol to jet pathway. And so we're having more conversations about what it's going to take to make SAF a reality when we have eager buyers like the commercial airline industry.
Tune in the first Wednesday of every month on AOA for the monthly grind and learn more at ncga.com. Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, where we take a close look at the benefits of cooperative ownership. Every week, we'll host a new guest and discuss how you can get the most from working with your local cooperative. And we'll learn why farmers and ranchers just like you choose cooperatives to help them persevere and prosper. Tune in each Tuesday or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Now. We tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But sometimes we don't see what's right in front of us. Victory over cancer is in front of us. Right now, cancer research is saving lives. Cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to new discoveries and new treatments and ultimately, one day, victory over cancer. Give to the V Foundation. Right now, one out of every two men and one out of every three women will get cancer in their lifetime. Now is your moment. You may save someone you love. 100% of your donation goes directly to game-changing research. 100%. Donate at V.org. Because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, brought to you by our friends at Cenex. Not all grease is created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more online at cenex.com. All right, now we want to turn our attention and focus to the latest meat demand monitor out from Kansas State University in a partnership with the Pork and Beef Checkoffs. And joining us now to go through the March 2024 report, Dr. Glenn Tonsor with K-State University is with us here today on the show. Glenn, thanks for joining us. Hope you're doing well.
Oh, my pleasure, Jesse. And shout out to everybody. Hope you enjoyed the eclipse. College basketball's wrapped up and hope life is treating each well.
Yeah, UConn getting their second straight national title on the men's side. I did pick them in one of my brackets. I didn't win my bracket, though. I had too many other losses throughout, Glenn. I don't know about you.
Oh, ditto. I actually had UConn beating Purdue. Maybe I shouldn't say that here, because you probably have quite a few Purdue alumni on your broadcast. But it was a fun tournament to watch.
It definitely was. Definitely was. All right, let's get caught up on the latest MDM. I know as we've been going through the last few months, you've been seeing a lot of different trends kind of appear and continue. So let's start there. Are we seeing some of the same trends continue in the April or in the March numbers?
Yeah, in short, yes. So you know, I'll jump to our demand insights. For a quick reminder, the MDM looks at both retail, so think grocery store for at home, as well as food service, specifically dinner meal, restaurant demand. That's by design to try to help us understand those different market channels. And in March here of 24, demand through the grocery store channel, as a general statement, was up compared to February. Pork chop demand was basically flat, but the other categories, ribeye steak, ground beef, bacon, chicken breast, they were all up. And they were also up compared to March of 23. So month over month, as well as year over year, we had some retail demand improvement, which is great. But a little bit the opposite story when I look over at food service. So most of the restaurant meals that we look at, so again, like a ribeye steak, you know, center of the plate, pork chop, chicken breast, they were down when we look at March of 24 versus March of 23. It's kind of a mixed bag compared to February more recently. But year over year, the pattern I would say is folks are emphasizing at-home consumption. They're willing to pay up for those meat items and take them home and prepare them themselves. and foot traffic through restaurants and demand once they're in those restaurants is continued to soften. That to me is just another macroeconomic trend, is folks still want to have these proteins, but they're concerned about their finances.
That's I'm glad you summed it up that way, because as I was looking at some of these numbers, it just, I've been waiting to see, you know, looking at the MDM and to your point about the macroeconomic factors, when folks kind of really start to shy away from going to the restaurant, maybe that restaurant, their costs have just gotten to the point where they say, okay, hey, I can't get that steak at a restaurant, but I can buy one at the store a little bit cheaper, make it at home, and have that steak that way. And it seems like we're kind of turning that corner maybe a little bit here.
Agreed. And to build on that a little more, you know, when you go in a typical restaurant, I mean, if you go somewhere that's a steakhouse, you got a few steaks to choose from, but you're not going to choose between a prime, choice, select, and then across seven different cuts. I mean, there's some steakhouses do that, but that's not the typical experience. But conversely, go to a grocery store, you've got a lot of those, you know, flexibility options. And the same deal, say, with a pork chop, you know, thin cut, thick cut, bone in. You have a lot more ability to pivot and kind of stretch your dollar the way you want in the grocery store. The options in the restaurant are sort of predetermined by which restaurant you go into, is the point. And labor cost of running restaurants have went up consistent with other, you know, inflation aspects. So none of this is a stab at food service. I hope none of our listeners take it that way. But I'm not surprised at all that the typical respondent, again, this is a nationally representative survey, is slowing their foot traffic through restaurants.
I find it interesting as well that, you know, we've seen prices for beef continue to have risen, I should say, in the last few months, yet still folks are out there saying, hey, if I want a ribeye steak, for instance, or if I want a couple pounds of ground beef, I'm going to go get it. And so I find that interesting that that's still out there, Glenn.
Yeah, and one thing to remember, I'll try not to get too geeky here, but as we reduce the amount of beef that's available, you know, we're on the front end of that, and I suspect it's going to go on for a couple of years. You know, the typical volume per person that's consumed, or per capita consumption is the number that floats around, is going to come down. But that's an average statistic. And just to make the point, you know, I personally am probably going to keep bidding to keep that steak in front of me in that example, but somebody else may not. And the net of that is some people will continue to pay up for those items, but they're going to be the ones that are a little bit less price sensitive, is the point. So some people will walk away, and the net result of that is we're going to have higher beef price unless we have some very undesirable adverse event occur in the next couple of years that shock demand in a bad way. Supply is pretty much going to force that. But the price sensitivity, or kind of your sticking point when you say no, differs a lot across households, is what I'm trying to impress on your listeners. And we're going to see that play out for sure in the next couple of years.
To that point, I'm going to skip ahead here a little bit. And your ad hoc questioning for this month's report, looking at the recent annual meat conference, there was a lot of talk about generational differences in meat consumption and demand. Maybe we can tie that in with what you're just talking about here, Glenn. What were some of the things you guys found there?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we're a country of 300 million people, Jesse, and lots of diversity by lots of ways you can think about it. You're jumping to the generational, you know, how old you are as a respondent, and that's key. And we did highlight that in the March report. The part we highlighted was differences in what we call protein values. And as a quick reminder, what I'm calling protein values here are what's most important and what's least important in your protein purchasing decision. I put a list of 12 things, so price, safety, taste, environmental impact, and others, in front of these respondents and ask them to tell me the four that drive your protein purchasing decision and the four that are least important. And of course, the four you don't pick are kind of intermediate, you know, average importance, if you like. The take home we highlight across generations is baby boomers, which are the older group we're looking at in this assessment. Those born before 1964 place much higher priority on taste, freshness, and price than the younger generation of millennials. And to be clear here, millennials I'm referring to as born between 1981 and 1996. I'm highlighting that because I have even younger respondents in the survey, but not necessarily enough of them to break it out in this report. So, you know, if you're born after 96, I'm kind of ignoring you in these statements. But the younger group, the millennials, put a higher weight on what I sometimes describe as social issues, so environmental impact, animal welfare, than the baby boomers. And baby boomers put a heavier impact on price, taste, and freshness. Those that run meat counters would probably attest to this. This feeds into niche market differences by generation. And it's certainly another source of diversity in the meat complex.
Yeah, it's a very, that is interesting to look at. I'm not at all surprised by some of those numbers either with that separation between generations, because you think about, especially the millennial folks, you know, with their thoughts on some of those social environmental issues, you know, there's been more of a drive and an acceptance here, I think, amongst younger folks on plant-based and things like that, and high protein and organic and all these different things, Glenn. That makes sense to me.
Agreed. And the other one, you know, this isn't in this data. Well, it is. I just didn't tease it out this way. But all else equal, like census data would tell us, younger generations are more likely to be single or smaller households. Why does that matter? You know, the role of a value pack is very different if you're feeding six versus one. Or if you're feeding just one, you might walk in and, you know, pay up for the, you know, we'll go back to our steak examples, a 12-ounce steak that's cut exactly the way you want it. It's got the four claims you want. And by the way, Jesse, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I have no problem with that at all. You know, I love the fact we got all these choices in our wonderful American market. But basic economics would say some household characteristics are going to lead you to demand different things. And if you are, you know, at a different stage of life and or feeding a bigger household, you're probably going to look at those claims differently.
Well, great thoughts. Glenn, anything final for us here on the MDM this month?
Fire up those grills. You know, we're about to that point. I look forward to seeing the grilling effect show up in the MDM and outside of meat. You know, we live past the eclipse. Some people had doomsday kind of things. This is an economist point, but I do encourage us to look outside and recognize life is good.
Definitely, definitely. And if folks want to read through all of the data in the latest Meat Demand Monitor every month, I know they can do that easily online. Where can they find it, Glenn?
Agmanager.info is the website here at K-State. We have a host of things, not just the MDM, but all of the MDM information you and I talk about every month, and then some, is all available there for free.
Agmanager.info for more information. And we always appreciate a conversation with Dr. Glenn Tonsor from Kansas State University going over the March Meat Demand Monitor. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us this month on AOA. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, Jesse. Thank you.
All right. Coming up next here on AOA, beyond me thinking about what I'm going to put on the grill tonight, to Glenn's point, we are going to switch gears and talk the dairy industry. We're going to have a conversation with the president and CEO. He's been on the job for a couple of months at the National Milk Producers Federation. Greg Dowd is going to be joining us here in just a few minutes on the program. We'll be back with more on AOA. Brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Learn more at Cenex.com. We'll be back right after this.
AGCO is proud to launch PTX, a new leading brand that combines precision ag technologies from Precision Planting and PTX Trimble. The alignment of these brands supports farmers, dealers, and OEMs globally. PTX Trimble and Precision Planting understand the challenges of farming. That's why they design solutions to help you implement technology and automation on your farm. They knew there was a better way, so they're building it together. With a combined set of products from Precision Planting and PTX Trimble, there are now precision ag technologies to touch all brands, equipment types, and farms. PTX spans the entire crop cycle, from land prep to planting, spraying to harvesting, and each pass in between. Innovative brands you trust, powerfully simple, seamlessly compatible. PTX. Visit PTXAg.com to learn more.
You're listening to AOA. Here is a check of the market trade action on this Tuesday. Let's start with the grains and oil seeds, as we see mostly pressure led lower by this wheat trade, as we're seeing world wheat values continue to rise just a bit. Also, this week's crop progress report showed winter wheat conditions staying about the same, 56% good to excellent, just 12% rated poor to very poor. Forecast ahead has turned wetter for the Dakotas and upper Midwest as well, beneficial ahead of planting season. Spring wheat planting now 3% complete, in line with the average pace. Meantime, on the corn and soybean side, Mostly quiet action there with corn around unchanged. Soybeans pushing a little bit lower. Some pressure in soybean meal. Thursday, we'll see the April WASDE report out from USDA. Only expecting minor changes in that report. But nonetheless, we'll still be keeping our eyes on any surprises that may come out of that report from USDA. Brazil's supply company CODAB pegged Brazil's corn area to be as much as 9% lower. A wide difference in production estimates still exists between CODAB and USDA as well. Meantime, as in corn, traders will be more interested in changes in the Brazil production number, with some private analysts and CONAB currently as much as 7 million metric tons to 10 million metric tons below the USDA March estimate. Basis for corn and soybeans expected to remain relatively neutral to bearish here in the short term. Tuesday morning, USDA did report a private export sale of 124,000 metric tons of soybeans to unknown destinations for the current marketing year. Over in the livestock arena, cattle and hog futures are moderately higher to start off Tuesday's session. Cattle looking for a little more follow-through after a decent recovery on Monday. Overall, things relatively quiet. Energy's crude oil up 10 cents a barrel, $86.53. You're listening to AOA for the American Ag Network. I'm Jesse Allen.
In Iraq, our truck hit a roadside bomb. I had about 16 surgeries on my hand so that I could regain function. And when I came home, I needed a new roof due to a storm. And my electrical was deemed unsafe. And I was about to lose homeowner's insurance as well. I didn't really know where to go in order to get help. And so I applied for Operation Homefront Critical Financial Assistance Program. They've really been a blessing. Operation Homefront is a safety net. A lot of veterans, they fall through the cracks sometimes. And Operation Homefront, they catch us. It's been a blessing to us. It's a blessing to other veteran families. And it's good to know that when we come home, there are people who are there that care about us and want to see us do well and want to see us succeed. And we feel it and we appreciate that. I would say you guys are angels behind closed doors.
Visit OperationHomefront.org to learn more.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex. Cenex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants. Trust your local experts at your nearest Cenex location or visit them online at cenex.com for more information. Well, joining us now here on Agriculture of America, pleased to have him with us, Greg Dowd, the president and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation. And Greg, it is great to have you on AOA, sir. Thanks for joining us. Hope you're doing well.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, I know busy times, especially in the dairy industry right now, a lot of headline news out there. And of course, a lot of different issues that we are watching. And you've been on the job now as president and CEO for a few months. So I know we're going to talk about that here as well today. I want to start, though, top of mind for me, of course, is this avian flu and the bird flu in dairy. Can you just give us any updates real quick, Greg, on some of the latest that we are seeing with the spread of HPAI throughout dairy herds?
Yeah, nothing going on in that world. 3 months on the job, and here we go already. You know, I was at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association back in the day when we had mad cow disease, and so this stuff follows me around, Jesse. I think I don't know what's going on here, but the honest answer is we're learning day by day what's going on here. You know, the entire dairy industry is doing everything it can. Fortunately, you know, we know that the milk supply is safe. We, you know, through pasteurization, et cetera, we're doing everything we can to help our cows stay safe. And the National Milk Producers Federation implements with the Check Off the Farm program. And so we're really emphasizing biosecurity here. We're really emphasizing taking care of the cows, taking care of our workers, you know, everything we can do here to assure that we, you know, as we know, this is the safest food supply in the world. Our milk is the safest in the world, and we're going to do everything we can to keep it that way.
Well, of course, to your point, biosecurity, so important. I know there's a lot of material out there for producers to check out online, and so we hope that biosecurity can win the day and we can stop the spread of this avian flu in our dairy herds. So we'll be watching this closely, of course. Let's switch topics, though. Another very important topic in terms of the dairy industry that I really wanted to talk to you about today is the FMMO modernization, federal milk marketing orders. Greg, this has been a long process. We knew it was going to be a long process. Get us up to speed on where things stand when it comes to the FMMO modernization.
Well, this is something very unique to the dairy industry and how milk is marketed in the United States. And it's a really complicated thing that goes all the way back to the 1930s, you know, 90 some years old. And we haven't updated this process in terms of pricing and all the mechanisms and we use for the different classes of milk, et cetera, since about 2000. So it's been 23, 24 years since we've updated a lot of this stuff. And we knew it would be difficult when we did it. We didn't know that it would be the world's longest USDA hearing, 5 months, somewhat 12 or 13,000 pages of testimony. So the other day, we finally, everybody submitted their final comments, and now we're waiting on USDA to make it its initial determination on what it plans to do with all of this information and what the update will look like. We think we'll get that sometime around July 1. We'll have opportunity to react to this. Then the process is we'll get a final thing here towards the end of the year and probably by the first quarter of 2025 to have the opportunity for the producers to vote. Jesse, the point is this is for the producers and how milk is priced. This isn't about all the different elements of this industry, but this is the primary focus of this is on, first of all, you know, a proper price for milk for producers and a consistent supply of milk for consumers.
Well, and thinking about this process too that you mentioned, Greg, it's so long and there's a lot of folks that you know, have stake, of course, in this, and there's all the different comments and things and different ideas and proposals that have to be put together to find a common ground. That's part of the reason why this process takes so long, and to your point, to get it updated, because it hasn't been updated in many, many years, Greg.
Well, you know, from a national milk producer's perspective, we started some 2 years before this, and I think there was over 100 meetings that, you know, all occurred long before I came on board. Many, many different aspects of this that were debated hotly within the national milk process. But the key point here from a national milk perspective is our proposal was unanimous. So all the different cooperatives in the U.S. and dairy, about 70% of the milk that's produced in the U.S. came up with a unanimous set of recommendations to do all this. And here in Washington, and when you're going through one of these processes, that is a very, very powerful thing that I continue to drive home. I was just really impressed coming at this from the outside, looking in to see all the work that has been done to this, the consensus that has been built. We don't expect USDA to be exactly in lockstep with what our consensus proposal was, or not consensus, unanimous. But it'll be really interesting to see at the end of the day what USDA does, because at the end of the day, it's the producers that vote on this and up or down and what these changes are going to look like, not anybody else.
We are talking today with Greg Dowd, the president and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation. Greg, let's turn our attention to, now you've been on the job a couple of months, as you mentioned earlier, and kind of stepping into this role. You have a lot of experience, of course, in terms of ag policy, being a former undersecretary, and things of that nature. So talk to me about some of your goals. What are some things on the horizon for you here as we go throughout the rest of 2024, beyond the two big issues we just talked about, of course, with avian flu and then the FMMO stuff? What's kind of at the forefront for you as you lead the National Milk Producers Federation?
Well, you know, I grew up on a farm in Kansas, but it wasn't a dairy farm. But my street cred was that I actually was on the K-State dairy cattle judging team back in 1988. So I do kind of know my way around a dairy cow. But when I was in government as the chief ag negotiator in the Trump administration, you know, we renegotiated NAFTA, USMCA. And so certainly a part of those negotiations with Canada, and then spent an enormous amount of time on dairy in the China Phase One agreement. So having an understanding of all of those things, you look at the industry today, you know, we're somewhere 16, 17 on our way to 18 plus percent of all the milk in this country that's produced being exported today. We are spending several new billions of dollars, $6, $7, $8 billion in new processing, cheese and other products, and with an eye on the export market internationally. If you look around the world globally, we're growing and just about in terms of what we're doing as an industry and just about everybody else around the world is shrinking, whether you look at the Europeans, the Asians, et cetera. So the opportunity for us is to continue to innovate domestically and grow internationally. And I think the dairy industry, what I've been saying to everybody, I think your better days are ahead of you. I think there's still a lot of upside potential here, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
I would ask you as well, in terms of expanding international markets, and I know we've had challenges, of course, with Canada with dairy trade. To that point, is trade with Canada still maybe the top issue, so to speak, as we look at, you know, some of our export partners and challenges that are out there, Greg?
Well, I think the Canadian issue is very, very difficult. And being a guy that was involved in those conversations, it's very difficult to write a law to prevent somebody from robbing a bank. You just can't figure out all the different ways that somebody might circumvent what you put in a law, or in this case, a trade agreement. And clearly, we anticipated that Canada would try to be slippery on this deal. And certainly they have. And I think we have to continue to look at that. And that's going to be an issue for a long time. I think what we're looking at right now in national milk, and one of the things that we're having a conversation about, is a program that we've had for a long time called the CWT program, the Cooperatives Working Together program. And this is something very unique to all of agriculture. And this is an opportunity for a fund that is generated by the industry to work on ways to promote and move dairy products, particularly cheese, out of the United States. We're looking at that to see, you know, in the new environment as we update and go forward as an industry, there are newer, different, or innovative ways that we can use these funds to benefit milk prices in the United States on behalf of producers.
Well, Greg, great thoughts. Anything final you want to mention or reiterate to folks listening in today, especially our dairy producers out there? Anything else you want to mention for us here today?
Well, I think the key thing is we're really, you know, with this bird flu thing right now, this is a tough time. But we, you know, we're working very, very diligently together. Everybody in the industry is having a great interaction and conversations about this. And this is a time where, you know, you have an opportunity to really work with some of the best people in your government to figure out this is a new environment, a new situation. This is going to require all hands on deck and a lot of leadership. And I look forward to working with our government officials on this as we learn more, because there's still a great deal we have to learn about this. The veterinarians in this industry are doing a tremendous job, and I really appreciate and understand the difficulty that producers are in right now with this, but look forward to working with you and getting through this situation, because we have better days ahead. There's no question about it.
Well, we will leave it at that. Again, learn more and stay up to date online at nmpf.org. With that, the president and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation, Greg Dowd. Greg, thanks for joining us on AOA today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And once again, Greg Dowd with the National Milk Producers Federation. All right, coming up next, we're going to stay with the dairy industry. We're going to talk dairy markets with Alyssa Badger from High Ground Dairy. She joins us next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants. Learn more at Cenex.com. Back with AOA right after this.
If you're caring for one of the 16 million Americans living with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you probably have many questions. COPD makes it harder to breathe and worsens over time. As a caregiver, you may juggle many roles. Being connected to the right resources can help. That's why the Learn More, Breathe Better program and Respiratory Health Association created the COPD Caregivers Toolkit. This free toolkit will help you better understand the disease, prepare for doctor's appointments, navigate home life changes, help after a COPD flare-up, and stay mentally and physically healthy through it all. Help your loved one live better with COPD. Visit nhlbi.nih.gov/COPD-caregivers.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
This is Around the Table, where we explore the benefits of cooperative ownership. Today, Ken Bryan, Director of Product Development with CHS Animal Nutrition, will discuss the importance of fly control for cattle. Ken, cattle producers know fly control is important, but what differences can good fly control make?
The best fly control program will never eliminate flies, but it's going to control flies to a population level that minimizes the negative impacts on our livestock.
Well, what are some new strategies for fly control?
In recent years, difluobenzuron, which trade name would be Clarifly, has gained a lot of traction as a feed-through to control multiple species of flies, both in confinement situations and in grazing situations.
Well, when is the most effective time to start a fly control program?
Flies start hatching when the weather warms up in the spring, and ideally we'd like to get ahead of them by about 30 days before the hatch. Of course, warm weather rolls into different regions of the country at different times, so I can't give you a date that works for everyone. We need to keep an eye on the long-range forecast, kind of know what our weather pattern's doing.
Well, what economic and performance improvements could producers expect from effective fly control management practices such as feed-through fly control ingredients?
The payoff from implementing an effective fly control program will always have a great return on investment. Even in years when calf prices were low and input costs were high, I would conservatively calculate ROIs for producers that were between 4-to-1 and 7-to-1. In our current market, the return is going to be a lot higher. We can expect winning weights to be 20 to 30 pounds higher. The added weight is a combination of less herd health issues like pink eye, mastitis, things like that that are going to affect calf growth. But then also, we're giving that calf more time to spend grazing and less time fighting flies.
Thank you for joining us Around the Table. Learn more about the benefits of cooperative ownership at cooperativeownership.com.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex and Cenex Premium Diesel. Find more information, trust your local experts at your nearest Cenex or just go to cenex.com. Joining us now as we take a look at what is happening in the dairy markets, Alyssa Badger with High Ground Dairy joins us. And Alyssa, thanks so much for being back with us here on AOA. It has been a while. Hope you're doing well.
Good to be back. Always love chatting dairy with you.
Well, let's start. Of course, there's been a lot of talk in the news about avian flu, HPAI's spread in dairy cattle. And from your perspective, how much of or has there been a big impact in the dairy markets with all of this headline news surrounding avian flu and dairy cattle, Alyssa?
Yeah, that's a tough one to analyze. You know, as soon as the news broke that there were sick cows in Texas a couple weeks ago, there was a bearish reaction in the market, but that also coincided with the seasonal rise in milk production and milk availability. So we saw milk, cheese, whey, non-fat dry milk, they sold off between 2% and 5% throughout those 2 weeks, because I think the initial concern was a negative consumer reaction to the news. And then maybe potential trade restrictions internationally, but we have nothing to confirm that either of those scenarios will play out. And as you probably saw in just the last few trading days now, we've really recaptured a lot of those losses in a very short time. In my opinion, this kind of plays into the fact that if you want a bullish argument, we already have low heifer inventories. The U.S. milk production situation is pretty bullish. So, you know, depending on how rapidly this spreads, which it doesn't sound like there's a lot of animals, but it really does seem like more of a hindrance on a recovery in milk production anytime soon. And again, we just don't really expect milk to come back until maybe the second half of this year, but it's going to be tough.
Well, and it's been an interesting ride, no doubt. To your point, some of these markets coming back, there is still a lot of unknown out there with the spread of avian flu that, of course, we're going to have to keep watching as we move forward. There's other things, though, that impact this dairy trade as well, and one of those is milk production reports. What's the latest from what we saw, the most recent milk production report here recently? Any big notes there that could have an impact on this market, Alyssa?
Yeah, I think so. So February is the latest data we have, and we fell back 1.3%, and that was the eighth consecutive month of declines. It's been a few years since we've seen losses extend for this amount of time. That being said, it was sort of anticipated by the market. These negative milk flows are here to stay for the next handful of months, as I mentioned earlier. And I think it's important to remember that cow numbers are down. We're down 89,000 head versus year ago levels. So this is the smallest herd size we've had since the summer of 2019. So nearly 5 years ago. And this is a kind of a pretty wild stat, but of the top 10 dairy producing states in the US, just one state saw milk production grow against year ago levels. And that was Wisconsin. And that's because their cow numbers are flat and not below year ago levels. And their yields are strong because they had a really nice February month for cows and cow comfort.
How about let's look at a few other segments of the dairy industry here in the markets. What about butter prices? Any big moves there recently?
Oh my gosh. So it seems day after day on the CME spot session, butter is stretching to fresh highs for the year. We're getting really close to that $3 per pound mark. This is really early in the year for that to be happening, especially during spring flush when there should be plenty of milk around, so to speak. I think, you know, there's a lot of nervousness around another short squeeze happening into fall. And given that we don't have any new butter churn capacity coming online this year or next, it's hard to believe that butter won't see that same rally we've seen the last 2 years throughout Q3 and Q4. So it seems like people are getting an early position on in the market. I think another thing to consider, you know, we saw the cold storage report and butter inventories look like they're really high, but clearly, this must be the fact, you know, sitting in cold storage is probably unsalted butter for the baking sector. And we don't have the salted butter that's eligible to trade on the CME spot. So there's no one that's able to push that down and sell their, salted butter on the exchange. So that's kind of preventing prices from falling back despite the high inventory numbers. So some pretty interesting stuff going on, and definitely traders are nervous about $3 butter.
Yeah, that's something to watch. How about cheese? Any notes there in the cheese markets?
Yeah, we've seen strength in the cheese market as well. If anyone listening is unfamiliar, so class three milk is priced off of cheese in dry whey. Cheese saw some strength today during the cash session. June class three milks hit limit highs. And I think part of that reason is because we got February trade data on Friday, and it was really supportive on cheese. We saw record exports into Mexico. U.S. cheese has been discounted on the world market for months, I think, you know, since the end of November. And we are starting to get more and more international business because of that. And we're still, you know, pretty undervalued versus where New Zealand and Europe are trading. They're closer to, you know, $1.80 to $2 per pound. So there's a lot of room there for cheese prices to move higher, in our opinion.
All right. Well, great stuff, Alyssa, as always. And I know if folks have questions, they want to watch what's going on in the dairy markets. You guys have a lot of great info on your website, don't you? Where can folks learn more?
Highgrounddairy.com. You can request a free trial, upper right-hand corner there, and we'll get you some information sent out right away.
Fantastic. Highgrounddairy.com for more information with that. Vice President of Global Operations and Insights for High Ground Dairy, Alyssa Badger. Alyssa, thanks for joining us on AOA today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
And once again, Alyssa Badger there with High Ground Dairy joining us here as we wrap up AOA today. Brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease is created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at Cenex.com. Well, coming up on tomorrow's program, we are going to have an extended conversation with the ranking Republican on the Senate Agriculture Committee, John Bozeman of Arkansas. Senator Bozeman's going to join us for segment one and two on tomorrow's program as we get the latest on the farm bill and talk other issues. You don't want to miss that. All that and more coming up tomorrow on AOA. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.
AGCO is proud to launch PTX, a new leading brand that combines precision ag technologies from Precision Planting and PTx Trimble. The alignment of these brands supports farmers, dealers, and OEMs globally. PTx Trimble and Precision Planting understand the challenges of farming. That's why they design solutions to help you implement technology and automation on your farm. They knew there was a better way, so they're building it together. With a combined set of products from Precision Planting and PTx Trimble, there are now precision ag technologies to touch all brands, equipment types, and farms. PTx spans the entire crop cycle, from land prep to planting, spraying to harvesting, and each pass in between. Innovative brands you trust, powerfully simple, seamlessly compatible. PTx. Visit PTxAg.com to learn more.
Teachers are dynamic leaders, shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Achieving this takes skill and expertise. They're tireless explorers, creatively discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, experimenting, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, and connecting with each other. Leading by example. Experience the unique joy of helping students thrive. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready to begin? Explore teaching at teach.org, a campaign supported by the U.S. Department of Education, teach.org, and 1 million teachers of color.